Welcome back to the Verified Athletics Podcast. Excited to announce the release of the beta version of the College Selector. College Selector is something that we developed to connect high school athletes with the right colleges. So we asked high school athletes a series of questions, the same questions that I would ask from my 10 years of college football coaching experience. And then we mapped their answers against a database of information on schools and also some information that we have on the athlete about the level in which we think that they could play at, in order to connect them with the schools that we think that they should be reaching out to. So this is really exciting. The goal here is to eliminate the thousands of dollars that athletes pay for this type of advice and make the recruiting process, just like our mission says, more affordable, more accessible, more informative. So we're excited to release that. If you're a listener of the podcast and you want to have early access to the beta version of the College Selector, please send an email to support@verifiedathletics.com. Our guest today is Mark Rogers from Mark Rogers TV. He works at ESPN. He also hosts his own podcast and college football talk show, where he really digs into every college football team in the country. So I was really excited to have him on and talk to him about all the things that he's doing. So sit back, enjoy, and listen up. All right, Mark, thanks for coming on to the podcast. How's it going?
Thank you so much, Nate. Been looking forward to doing this, and finally we've been able to connect our schedules. So I'm ready to talk some college football or whatever you're going to throw at me.
Well, yeah, why don't you tell us about what's going on at Mark Rogers TV right now?
We actually had you and anybody else tuned in about a week ago. It was a week ago Wednesday, would have seen our big 10,000 subscriber celebration. So we hit 10,000 subscribers last Wednesday night, so we're happy about that. Had kind of a mock celebration in a sense. We were truly celebrating, but the party hats, the balloons, and the little cake that I had made up with the Voice of College Football, 10,000 subscribers. But what's really exciting is that it took me, so I opened a YouTube account in January of 2010. Now, I didn't get really serious about producing videos until the summer of 2013. But I really just, my strategy was no strategy in a business or marketing sense. Just create as much college football content as possible, which if anybody checks out my site, I've got over 7,000 videos. So I'm cranking them out like five a day. And so the exciting thing is that it took me 5 years to get to 5,000 subscribers, and it took me about 8 to 9 months to get the next 5,000. So we're on a pretty good roll.
Yeah, what do you think changed that caused you to take off in ways that you hadn't before?
I think one is an actual strategy, which I certainly don't know the ins and outs of YouTube. It's some of that is a mystery and well beyond me, so I learn a little bit every day. But just learning from a number of people that I've picked up along the way and who know various sides of the online business. I grew up in traditional TV. So I was very new to social media and online work, and I've had to learn a lot. And again, it was just a change in focus and going from 100% content to 85 or 90% of my time going to content and just working the marketing and the analytics and the algorithms of social media and YouTube a little bit just to help me out and being a little bit better of a businessman, I guess.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I think I probably suffer from that same thing. I'm so focused on my mission, which is just to, you know, make the college recruiting process more accessible, more informative, and more affordable, that I sometimes miss the fact that the more people I reach, the more able I am to do that. And I got to focus that on that as well.
Yeah. So you're finding this out as well, is that I never agreed with the philosophy that you should focus on your weaknesses to make them strengths or make them stronger. I'm a true believer in, depending on the organization, and certainly the larger the organization, the more you can focus on your strengths and let other people fill the gaps in your weaknesses. I'm a one-man band, so I need to focus on all of it. But still, the main thrust of what you do and the reason you're doing it is because you have certain strengths. Don't steer away from those, but at the same time, you do need to take care of the full spectrum of whatever your mission is or vision, to get there. And there's some things that you're not comfortable with, maybe some things that you may not do so well that you need to go through step by step by step. And I'm addressing those and have been, as opposed to doing like kind of what it sounds like you've outlined where, hey, this is what I love doing and this is what I'm good at. So this is what all I'm going to do.
Yeah, and you're doing all of this. It's still like a moonlighting gig for you too, right? You're still full time at working ESPN. So
absolutely.
So it's a good mix. That's got to be tough to get 7,000 videos out. Not in the prime hours of your day.
Yes, my prime hours, they switch all the time. So I don't know what your schedule's like these days, Nate. What do you personally look at each week in regards to how you spend your time from a professional standpoint?
My time is crazy now. On top of Verified Athletics and the podcast and all the things that we're doing to build the platform for high school athletes and college coaches, I still work also a full-time regular gig where I work in artificial intelligence systems for a company in Connecticut named Bridgewater. So that is another part of my full-time gig. And then on top of that, I have a 10-month-old daughter. And on top of that, I'm buying a house. And so it's just, they just keep on coming. I think I just try to squeeze every drop out of every minute and then sleep to recover and try to do that as fast as I can and get back at it every day.
I hear you, because my full-time gig, being at a 24/7 TV operation, I certainly don't want to misrepresent this. They're very good to me. They're very kind to me and don't overwork me in any way. But there's a difference between being overworked and just working strange hours. So I don't necessarily, again, am I overworked to any degree at all. Disney's very good to me, ESPN in particular. But yeah, the hours are a bit strange. It's a lot coming home at 3-4 o'clock in the morning for me, but also having a few days during the week where I'm working a regular day shift, and it gets kind of the clock management and the clock internally gets a bit screwed up at times.
Yeah, I wonder if it's somewhat similar to coaching. I don't know. In coaching, I feel like the amount that you have to work to earn the same amount of money is usually a lot more than most other jobs, because it's such a popular thing that people would want to do. And I wonder if being in like the sports broadcast, probably broadcasting just in general, but probably kicked up a notch a little bit more even in the sports world. Is that like how you see it?
Well, I think that's a great connection you made right there, because I look at you coaches and think, man, you guys are nuts when I hear about coaches sleeping in their office. And I don't think the typical fan looks at that side of it. They look at the $5, 6, and $7 million made by the likes of Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and think that wouldn't that be great, and see him standing on the sideline on Saturday. Just the insane, first of all, the insane schedule. The second part of it, that the coaching aspect of it, and interviewing you a few months ago, we discussed it to a certain extent, but just the nomadic nature of the profession, even despite the success of a lot of coordinators, for example, at that level of the positional coach, coordinator, head coach level, these positional coaches and these coordinators that have just these long lists of every place that they've been across the country, and the standard of living from that aspect that they've had to put their family through is crazy to me. I've been at ESPN for 18 years, so I've been sitting in the same, spot for that long, as opposed to what coaches have to go through, most of them.
Yeah, it is tough. I think a lot of coaches, they start young, right? So you're starting when you're 21, 22, family's not such a big issue for you, and moving around can be exciting. Honestly, it could be fun to go to a new spot and you're like chasing your dreams. Like most coach, I mean, you can't be a coach unless if you're a really competitive person. So you're striving to reach the top of your profession the same way that you probably did as a player, trying to become the best player that you could be. And so every opportunity you get, you want to take. And, it's the way it works, is you can't go 3 years without it either being a good 3 years or a bad 3 years. If it was a bad 3 years, you're probably looking for another job without the choice. And if it was a good 3 years, you're looking for a new job, or you're getting opportunities for new jobs one way or another. I know, you know, my experience, this is something that I think a lot of people don't even think about. Most people don't think that they would lose their job for being too good at it. But in football coaching, that can happen. This is like a story from when I was coaching at Fordham. I'm trying to remember what year this was. It must have been around 2015 or 2016. I was coaching there. Joe Moorhead was our head coach. And we had turned the program around. In 4 years, we had taken a team that was 1-10. And then in the last 3 years, you know, the first year we got to like 500, just above 500. And then the 3 years after that, made the playoffs 3 years in a row, which was a great, you know, change of pace for Fordham and, you know, kind of putting Fordham back on the map in FCS football. And due to that, Joe got the opportunity to become the offensive coordinator at Penn State, which is awesome. Right. And, you know, so happy for him. And it's a great opportunity for him. He becomes the offensive coordinator at Penn State. Penn State has a full coaching staff. So now you have a whole coaching staff at Fordham that is still at Fordham while Joe goes to Penn State. And unless if they don't promote from within, if they hire someone from the outside, that person that comes in from the outside is going to clean house and bring in their own staff with their, you know, their connections. And so in some sense, like the whole staff, you know, was at risk for losing their jobs because the head coach, you know, had been successful enough to get a good opportunity. You know, in that case, the offensive coordinator ended up getting promoted to head coach at Fordham. He's actually now with Joe at Mississippi State, coaching the quarterbacks, Andrew Briner. But, you know, that was a real situation. There were people with families and kids that like had coached themselves so well that they were maybe, you know, having to take a downstep in their career had it not worked out that way.
Yeah, Nate, that's got to be a situation that's very unique to sports. As you were starting to outline that, I was thinking about various professions, and I really can't make a connection there. Certainly not from what I've experienced or seen. It's not like that in television or media. I've seen now companies take over a particular media outlet, and I fortunately haven't been. I've been part of a more personal situation along the way, but to where, for example, when I was in the South, covering the SEC at a particular TV station down there, and there were a couple times that some of my friends in the business would have a different company would take over their company and just clean house, just, you know, job performance not taken into consideration, just we're cleaning house. See ya.
Right. But that usually doesn't follow when you guys turn the company around and made it great, right? That's not usually what it follows.
Yeah. So that's where the disconnect is. But that coaching thing is just a different animal.
Yeah. And then there's other weird things about it too. I mean, I kind of ended up bouncing out of it by accident. I got hired to be the head coach of a professional football team in Australia. They were starting something similar like the AAF, which obviously is now folded. They were starting something like that in Australia. And we were bringing over all American players and coaches to start like a minor league to the NFL there. And like 3 days before I was supposed to fly out there to start like the season, they canceled the whole league. It folded, you know, 7 weeks earlier than the AAF did, basically. And, you know, by then it was August 10th or whatever, and football coaching staffs were full. And so, you know, I was, you know, having to sit out a season, I found another job that ended up being really rewarding and interesting in different ways and started Verified. And so that just kind of, it happened by accident. I had no intention of leaving coaching in the first place.
There was a league that started in the late 90s, very similar to the one that you're referencing, across the country, where the model was, let's bring in the stars and players from the local schools, popular schools, big time schools, and we'll attract crowds because everybody wants to watch. In my case, the kids from Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, Alabama, because that was the region. You know, people are going to come out and watch these guys play. And I don't remember the league, because we didn't cover it firsthand, because the team was two and a half or 3 hours away and we were focused on college football. But little did anyone know that the big crowds that were filling the stadium week to week, you know, they were making, you know, 5%, you know, per ticket, because they were giving away so many tickets just to get people in the door that lasted like half a season, and mid season everyone's going home. And it's kind of I remember watching the 30-30 and living through the USFL saga being kind of similar in regards to it looking healthier on television than the actual status of the league and it folding. So, yeah, sports is a rough business.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, the only way that you make one of those things work is you have to fake it until you make it, you know? And unfortunately, like in sports, and I run into this on the recruiting front too, there's no shortage of people, dreamers, that are willing to take chances in order to get their shot, to get their chance. And, you know, I think it's like, it's a crowd that is, I don't want to say like ripe for taking advantage of, but it's easy to sell them on like a business plan that's not really that sound and give it a shot because people want that shot that, you know, that if you're a college football player and you didn't make the NFL, you still think that you're an NFL guy. Like none of them are like, oh, I'm just not good enough. They're not giving me a chance. And so you're thinking this is my chance to prove myself. You know, so I don't know. I just wonder if like if a minor league to the NFL will ever happen. I don't know what it takes. I mean, maybe from your perspective, you know, in media, do you see a possibility for something to take off, or do you see why leagues have failed in a way that they can maybe succeed if they did something differently?
For as much as people are starved for football, between the NFL and college football, and of course it's all concentrated in the fall, so there's always that thought that, hey, people will want to watch football in the spring and summer. And it's failed how many times now? I'm thinking back as soon as I mentioned the USFL, the original XFL is an interesting story. The World Football League was kind of the first incarnation of all this back in the mid-70s, where they signed 5 to 10 NFL stars, and those were the headliners. Every team had one guy, and then the quality of play was decidedly less than that. But everybody signed the Larry Zonko, Paul Warfield guy, and the closing story to that saga is an interesting one where they played one season, maybe two seasons. It was the second season. It was the championship game. They had this huge trophy and presentation of the world championship or their league championship. And meanwhile, they're handing some enormous check, both in size and in value, to the winners, but it didn't cash. And as they were doing all this, you know, they are clearing out locker rooms and just folding the whole thing and getting out of Dodge. And the check was worth nothing that they were giving the players after the championship game.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, it's so interesting to be in the sports broadcasting business. How does someone get started there? Like, if you were fresh out of college, or maybe that's not the right time, how does someone transition to get into that career, and what is a career like?
So for me, I'm a dinosaur from that standpoint. In regards to, there was no usable internet. Of course, it was around, but at the time that I came out, so I tell people the story of my dad and I jumping in the car, and God bless him, he would get me to jump in the car, and this is right after I graduated from college, from Kent State University, and had my couple internships at the local ABC station where I was very fortunate to get on air to build a resume reel. They call it a reel now. We called it a tape then because it was a tape, and I guess they call it a demo. I don't know what they call it now. I hear all sorts of and I never have to deal with them anymore, so that's fine. But we would hop in the car, and physically, he just thought, he was old school, like tire industry, real estate. You jump in the car and you just go to physically go wherever you need to, knock on their door, and just because you've got a nice suit on and you're the go-getter, they're going to have 15 or 20 minutes of their time, which they don't 90-some% of the time. But the actual time that I got my first job, yeah, the station manager, the general manager had 15 or 20 minutes to talk to me. And so I was able to push my way in the door, and by fate or provision, they had a job opening for a news anchor reporter at the same time that I knocked on the door. And my story there that people find amusing, and I still can't believe it, is that they were, I didn't know that they were interviewing me. I just knocked on the door. Hey, can I talk to the general manager? They had an opening. They're just talking to me, and I'm selling them on being the next great sportscaster. And they had a news opening, so they asked me about news and my thoughts about news, and I told them flat out I despised news. And then I was asking them 3 or 4 months later after they hired me, why in the world did you hire me for a news job when I flat out looked you in the eye and told you that I despised it? Now, of course, their next phrase was, we have a news opening and I needed a job. So I was backpedaling, trying to figure out how I could get out of that statement. And they simply told me I read the teleprompter better than anyone else that they interviewed. So that was their decision. And we're talking small entry level station in Ohio at that point. For right now, man, it's so easy to make contacts with everyone. It is so easy. I've had 3 to 5 people contact me on LinkedIn, probably figuring out from the description on my LinkedIn profile that I have a management job at ESPN, and just started talking to me, and they now work at ESPN. Now, I didn't hire them. I don't have hiring, but I made the contacts for them to give them the opportunity. And of course they had to show themselves worthy of a position, but man. So I would say that the advantage is obvious, that you can contact anyone on social media and make connections all over the place. The downside is obviously everybody else is doing the same thing. Yeah, just showing that you're willing to do anything is one thing. You got to be willing to move anywhere. I don't think those things have changed because, you know, I went to college with a few people that thought, okay, I'm going to stay right here. I don't want to go to Wyoming or Nebraska or Mississippi like I did eventually. I want to stay in Ohio, or I want to work in New York or Los Angeles. Of course, that's the dream or goal of a lot of people. And that's, you need to be willing to go anywhere to start your career and maybe finish your career. I know a lot of people that, you know, when I worked in Mississippi, I would say 3/4 of the newsroom was not from Mississippi. People ask me about my experience in Mississippi from a standpoint of just the culture. And sure, I experienced a ton of it. I'm out at football stadiums and basketball arenas, high schools on Friday night, which was so much fun covering high school football. But I was insulated to a certain extent because I wasn't working with all Mississippians. I was working with about 1/4 of them. And also there was an Air Force base that was the major employer in the town. So most of my friends outside of the business were Air Force pilots from wherever in the country. So, wow, I think your question originally, Nate, had to do with getting a job and breaking into the business. And I just think that you have to be willing to do anything, and you have to be comfortable contacting anyone at any time and taking a job that you don't necessarily think is going to be your path, but just breaking into the business.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things I want to react to there. The first one is, I think people underestimate how much people in the world would be willing to lend them some time and even like be like a, I don't want to say a mentor, but like a 15-minute mentor, you know, someone that would be willing to get on the phone with you that you don't even know.
Absolutely.
Because they're just like, most people are good people. And I bet if you ask 3 or 4 of them, someone's going to jump on the phone, and that could be a connection or it could just be great advice. So I think not enough people do that or ask for that. And then the second thing I was going to react to was, you talked about being on a staff of people that really aren't from the place that you're at. And that happens, in coaching a lot, where you have coaches from all over that are joining a staff. And I remember, I'm guessing you know who PJ Fleck is. He's the head coach at Minnesota.
Yes, absolutely.
So PJ and I worked together at Rutgers University. He was a wide receivers coach. And I remember he on occasion would like flash a Southern accent. And that was really odd because I'm from Chicago. He's from Chicago. And he had never coached anywhere in the South. He went to school at, where did he go to school? I can't remember. But I know he coached at Ohio State, and he had coached at Northern Illinois. And I was like, I'm trying to put the pieces together. They don't make any sense. And then
I think he went to a MAC school. Did he?
I think he might have gone to Western Michigan, actually, which is where he was coaching. But I'm like wondering if I'm mixing that up or I'm confusing it. So I don't want to.
By the way, I was born in Chicago as well.
Oh, there you go. Well, anyway, so getting to the story about why he had a Southern accent. When he was at Northern Illinois, he was on a coaching staff, I think maybe Jerry Kill's staff, and the whole staff there were from the South. And you spend so much time with just like the other coaches in a room watching film that he might as well have been living in the South because of all the Southern accents that were around, and he had picked it up a little bit. Anyway, so those things can happen in coaching too, I think.
My kids grew up with Southern accents.
Oh, because they were,
which was very strange. They were with my wife and myself at the time. Most of the time, it was just strange that they had Southern accents. It was funny. I didn't want it to stay that way, but it was funny for the time being, and it left very quickly. So, Nate, you got to fill us in on PJ Fleck, because I won't call it a criticism, but potential criticism and curiosity about PJ Fleck from a lot of people is this guy really plugged in like that all the time? Is that an act, or is this guy just a ball of fire salesman? Salesman, and when I say salesman, that's probably taking it a critical way, but just a people person. Hey, the glass is always full, and I'm just attacking life and come along for the ride with me, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think it's interesting. Like the question, I think there's two different questions. One is like, is it an act? And at some level, like, I'm not sure, but there's the other question, which is that what he's like when the TV cameras aren't on? And the answer to that question is definitely yes. He is has so much energy. He is like the most energy probably of any coach or maybe even person I've ever been around. He's always very positive. He is a hard worker. He's personable, and I don't think it didn't surprise me for one second that he became a head coach and then a successful one from my time working with him. But it is so weird to be around someone like that, because like what you're seeing on TV, you feel like you never are around someone like that in person, and so you think it must be like a show for the TV, but it is how he is. Now, I don't know how much of it is like when he gets home and he's by himself, if he's just like takes off the masks that he's been putting on, that he puts on all day. So like, you know, I don't know him so well to say that, but I think that's just how he is.
And let's understand that, at least from my perspective, there's a little bit of that in all of us. And just to be a professional, you have to do that. And I kind of walk into work and let everyone know about your problems and that, you're not, feeling the best about your relationships or your finances or whatever is going on at that point. You got to kind of put on a happy face to a certain extent and just operate as a human being out there with people that don't want to hear it. So that's certainly legit to a certain extent.
Yeah, there's a balance to strike, though. I think that if you always try to act like you have your shit together or your stuff together, even when you don't, I think you really... you close yourself off from potential learning opportunities. And so when you have that mentality, you probably don't let people in a way that could be really helpful to you. Now, at the same time, like, no one wants to be around the person that is like, woe is me, you know, all the time either. So I think there's a balance to strike there in order to get the most out of, you know, friendship and life and your career all at once, you know?
No doubt.
Well, that's all really cool and interesting. I know one of the things I wanted to talk to you about too is the college football playoff. And I guess first, like from a media or fan perspective, you know, what do you think? What would you want teams or the college football playoff to look like? And why do you think it should look that way?
So when I mentioned professional sports in the NFL, a number of people tune me out instantly who are college football fans who hate the NFL for other reasons. They usually don't hate the NFL for their playoff system. They hate it for other reasons, the money and so forth and so on, and the purity of college football in comparison. But if you hear me out on an objective system is what I'm looking for. Which is difficult because you've got so many teams and they only play a limited a number of games in comparison to other sports. So there's very little overlap of games. So at the point, Nate, when we were relying on the BCS to tell us who the two best teams were, my argument against the BCS among many, because I thought it was a very flawed system, was I used the same thought process. Now I ask people who call me in and point back to the BCS, and many people, I'm surprised, defend the BCS. And I ask them, what sport would be the perfect sport to apply the BCS? And then I answer them, Major League Baseball. That is the best sport to apply the BCS. They play the most games against each other. They have the largest capacity and database of results. That's the sport. Now, of course, I don't think it should be applied to anything. Go play your playoff. That's the way it should be determined on the field. But that's the sport that should be applying the BCS, if anything, not the sport where there's just a fraction of teams that play a fraction of overlap in schedule, and we're trying to make all these comparisons between these teams. So there's a number of ways to do it that I think is almost exclusively objective and not the selection process that we currently have, which I think is just extremely flawed. And I'm not even that critical of the playoff selection committee. It's not like I rant and rave every year that they've done a bad job. I just think their job's impossible. They've got five major conferences. They have 10 total conferences that we ignore that aspect, but five major conferences, and they have to select four teams. And it's very rare that any of those champions played each other or really anybody comparable from other conferences to compare them against. So I think the big decider has to start with, if you're looking at playoff system, Nate, is are you going to include the group of five, which means 130 qualified teams or potentially qualified teams, or do you make the determination that there's no comparison between the two levels of play, the group of five, the power of five? I could do it either way. But if we went group of five, truly, if we went group of five, we'd have to expand it to 16 teams, because I believe if you win a conference championship that you should be in the playoff. And then it becomes so I've got two formats working. So we'll run with the first one, which would be include the group of five. You've got all 130 teams. You have 16 teams in the playoff. So you have 10 conferences and you let in all the conference champions automatically. It's a NCAA basketball tournament style, because if you would line up, if a higher being could tell us exactly who the top 64, 68 now teams are in the country in college basketball, those are not the teams that make the tournament. It's like the top 40 or 45. And then there's this big gap because the seventh and eighth place teams in the Big Ten and the ACC are better than the conference champions from other conferences, but they earned a right based on their conference championship. So there's a gap. And then you have some teams that might be the 150th best team in the country, but they made the NCAA tournament because they earned it. The same thing would happen in football. You would have the roughly 12 best teams in the country, then you would have this large gap and you'd have like the 50th best team and the 55th best team. And it wouldn't necessarily be the best tournament of qualified teams in athletically, but they at least earned it. Or you go the route of group of five, go do whatever you want, play your own championship. We're going to focus on the power five and we're going to play an 8-team tournament. With the five conference championships and three at-large, that I have all sorts of metrics that would determine who would fill out the three wild card spots. And also, I think scheduling is an issue in this, Nate. So the scheduling has to be fixed along with the playoff format. So I think it's odd. Again, I look at professional sports, that there's an organization that hands you your schedule every year. You don't have individual teams and programs running around playing and scheduling games 15 years from now with whomever they want. I just think that's insane. and you have schedule disparity. So I've got a stack of schedules around here in college football, and I've carved through about 10 to 12 of them. So I'm ranking the schedules. I do this every offseason, and I just I'm a nerd that way. And I provide look at a bunch of different metrics and comparisons, and I rank the schedules. And just the comparison of schedules is a joke. Now, you can't do anything about the conference schedules and how good the conference is itself, but the out-of-conference scheduling disparity is just crazy in college football. I would make it all equitable. Everyone would play, and depending on your format of conference schedules, non-conference schedules that had a 500 aggregate record from the year before. Everyone would play an equitable schedule. And that would at least give us a level playing field to rate and evaluate these teams.
Would you get rid of the FBS versus FCS teams games?
You know, I know that. So in the virtual world, you know, the theoretical. So we have to kind of separate those things, because sometimes we have conversations and arguments and debates on my channel, and some of it is not going to happen. It's not real world, you know, restructuring the entire college football map and different conferences. I've done that, but that's not going to happen. And a lot of these schools play very quality football in the FCS, very high levels of football, and they are somewhat dependent on those games against the Power Five schools. So from a money standpoint, that's needed. From what I understand and from what I've read, if it wasn't, I think it should all be closed. It should be within, you know, everybody should be playing the same type schedule. But I don't see an issue with some schools playing out of four or nine conference games and FCS and other schools playing a lower group of five. There's certainly an overlap there. So I wouldn't have an issue with that because of the practicality of the FCS programs needing that.
Yeah, I also think there's something about like the players' perspective, like for FCS players, that's like an all-star game in a way. That's like a big deal game. And I think it'd be a bummer to deprive those players of that opportunity, you know, to get their shot. And when they win, it's really exciting. Maybe from a fan's perspective, less so. I mean, I've coached in two games as an FCS coach against FBS teams where we've won against Temple and against Army. In ways that were like incredibly exciting, incredibly fun, last second, you know, victories. And I don't know, at least from the inside perspective, I wonder how many people are actually watching those games, but the highlights certainly make it on ESPN when that happens. And it happens all the time. So I think that there's something fun about it that I wouldn't want to lose.
Yeah, there's certainly an overlap in quality of play between the Power Five and the Group of Five, then the Group of Five and FCS. And then, like you say, even there are FCS schools that are, I don't think, week to week could compete. But I certainly would not discount, and it's happened, we see FCS schools beating Power Five teams.
Yeah, maybe one FCS program could compete, North Dakota State. Yeah, maybe that's the one.
Yeah. That's as soon as I started to go down that route, I was like, Mark, you need to stop that statement right now, because, yeah, that school can get the job done.
Yeah. And then what would you do with, let's say you had a 16 team playoff, what would you do with everyone else? You get rid of the bowl games altogether, or would you allow like other teams that are over 500 to play in a bowl game?
I love the bowl games. I'm a bowl nerd. I love the bowl games. I try to watch every game. I do certainly have ones I prefer, but yeah, I would keep the bowl games, and I think it would further diminish the bowls. But they've been diminished now, and the fans, this playoff system is just has the hyper attention of the college football world, and I get it. It's for the championship. But I love the bowl games, and I think they should continue. Are there too many bowl games? I go back and forth on that, because as long as there's a college football game on in December into January, I'm going to watch it unless I have other obligations. But yeah, I understand the ridiculousness of 2-5-7 or 6-6 teams playing in a bowl game.
Yeah, I understand the ridiculousness of it, but at the same time, it's great for the players, it's great for the coaches, it's great for the fans. I mean, it's just another game to watch. I mean, I don't understand who's getting hurt by it, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah, nobody's getting hurt. And from a television, I'll take it back to my role. You know, I see TV ratings. They're delivered to me each and every day. And when I say, you know, I don't want to misrepresent that like somebody's bringing them to my desk. You know, they're mailed to hundreds of us, emailed to us each and every day from the day before. And people make fun of these bowl games because they've got crazy names and, you know, the records of the teams don't necessarily justify making postseason play, but people watch them. You can take the highest rated college basketball games of the year, and there's a few that stand out. But if you go down the list to about game number 6, 7 on the college football ratings, no. People are watching the Poinsettia Bowl and the Great Idaho Potato Bowl far more than they're watching college basketball games.
Yeah.
So people watch them.
Yeah, and I don't think the playoffs introduction is really hurting the bowl games. Like the Rose Bowl, whether it's part of the playoff or not, is still a big deal. And the Poinsettia Bowl is still not that big of a deal, whether there is a playoff or not. I feel like they haven't really been diminished.
I will say, Nate, that this past season, Ohio State missing in the playoff and going to the Rose Bowl, I'm an Ohio State fan, so that comes out from time to time. It's not a deep, dark secret, but at the same time, I don't advertise that because I try to take a neutral approach to my show. But I don't know many Ohio State fans that weren't disappointed and viewed the Rose Bowl much differently this time and now than they would have 20 years ago just because of the playoff, and that being the destination and the goal for a program like that.
I'll give you that. That makes sense. And then just from my perspective, I think the playoffs are great. I think that it's the best outcome to get you a fair shot for the best teams. And expanding the playoff will do that even more so. I like your idea. I mean, the only one that you didn't mention that I think is worth considering is to have all five of the power conferences getting a bid, the best group of five school getting an automatic bid, and then like maybe two at-larges to come from anywhere. That's like maybe the other format that might make some sense.
I'm good with that too.
I imagine that like it'll happen the same in FBS as it has at all the other levels, where they start off with a small playoff and then they expand a little bit and a little bit. And now like FCS has 24 teams, 20 teams.
Yeah,
FCS has 20 teams. Division 2 has 24, and Division 3 has 32. Now, they don't play regular season games all the way through December. They don't have conference championship games, and so they're starting the playoff earlier, and they're just working through it, you know, one week at a time. They start either the weekend before or the weekend of Thanksgiving, if I remember correctly, so depending on the level. And I've had the experience of going to a bowl game with Rutgers. We went to the St. Petersburg Bowl, which is one of those bowl games that is like no one cares about. I think that year it was actually the Beef O'Brady St. Petersburg Bowl.
But I care, Nate. I'm the guy watching that game. And again, the TV ratings are better than you would think that they would be. But yeah, and sorry to cut you off, but I think the other look that those type of bowl games give the viewer, that automatically they make the connection, this isn't important and people don't care about that, is because for those games, there's like 12,000 people in the stands in a 50,000 seat stadium. So they assume nobody cares. Well, nobody's traveling. There's a difference. People are watching on TV. Nobody's traveling. It's like the first round of the NCAA basketball tournament. Half those arenas are 75% empty.
Yeah. And I was going to say that, that it was such a great, fun experience. You know, like the game, the fact that the game didn't matter in some ways like enhanced the experience for the players and the coaches. I mean, that's why you get the trick plays in there. That's why, you know, like the special plays. That's why you get, some players playing that might not have otherwise played. And it's a vacation-ish. You know, it's like there's events for the players. Like you always see them. I wonder if any fan really connects to it, but like always in like the TV, when they go into and out of the game, they're always showing like little clips of like the events that the players took a part in the days preceding it, which is just like a ton of fun. It's like a celebration to an end of a season for a football team in a way that's really fun and exciting. And you don't get that when you go to the playoffs. When you go to the playoffs, it's like, it's business. And like, you are working as hard as you can. And if you win, then you're like right back. You have like another week the next week, and it's a grind. It's exciting because, you know, it's the playoffs, but it's not the same. And I think like losing that bowl experience, I don't know. I wouldn't want to lose that.
Everything you just said about the bowl experience and the approach is absolutely true. And, you know, from a different perspective better than I do, based on that experience. I don't understand it though. Like, so I think it's a good thing. I have no issue with it. What's the difference that you finish 8-5 or 7-6? And sure, the teams go down there and they practice legitimately and they prepare. But yeah, you do see the trick plays. You do see the players playing that got some bowl practice and were better prepared to play in a game than they were, you know, 6 weeks earlier and all that. But what I don't understand is, so we now see players skipping bowl games. And I don't know what the list was, how high it went this year, but it's going to continue to grow. And then I think it'll cap out at a certain point. And I kind of explained this, or what I thought that kind of threshold would be a few weeks ago. But what I don't understand, Nate, is, okay, these games are perceived to be meaningless. Okay, what about all the games that are played in the regular season once teams are eliminated from their conference championship? So the 5-4 Michigan State team that can't win the Big Ten, are the last three games of their season meaningless? And in addition to that, what I would preach to my team, because this covers 90-some percent of the bowl games, is keep in mind that even when you're playing your biggest regular season game of the year, if you're Michigan State, you're playing Michigan, you're playing Ohio State, sure, that probably has the majority of, depending on how big the game is for, you know, just that particular season, you have a big slice of the college football fan base watching you. But there's 6-7 other games on TV at the same time. You don't have the attention of the entire college football nation like you do during a bowl game. If people are watching college football when you're playing a bowl game, 90% of those bowl games are played in exclusive time slots where there are no other games. And I would remind my team that you played all these important games in your conference, and we hoped to win a conference championship, but we didn't. We finished in fourth place, and we played all these important games that we deemed important. But this is going to be the time when more people are going to be watching you than at any other time in the season. If you're Temple or you're Kansas State, on down the line, Rutgers. I don't get it.
No, I think that's a great point. Yeah, and I would just like, you said something that like triggered a thought for me, which is you kept on using the word like they're playing the game. And that's like the words that people use. There's a way in which the bowl game has a feeling of playing a game that other games don't have. And I mean that in the best possible way. I mean that like the way in which you go out and you play football, like in your backyard with your friends, and you smile and you laugh, and like that is like what football is for a lot of people when they're young. I think that the bowl game has a feeling of that in a way that other games don't. You're right. It's like the games at the 5-4 Michigan State games at the end of the year are really like the same thing. But for some reason, they don't carry that energy, that vibe. Maybe because it's like it's a vacation, or I don't know what it is. But I wonder how TV can do a better job of maybe like getting that feeling out there. Because I don't know, when I watch the games, I don't feel that in the same way that I do when I'm there live and in person. So I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah. I love the bowl games. I love the crazy names to the bowl games, and there are new ones that pop up every year. And then there are ones that are discarded that until somebody reminds me or I'm looking something up that remember the Beef O'Brady's Bowl. And then some of the names, I find it funny. They don't make sense. Like, Buffalo Wild Wings sponsored the Citrus Bowl for a long time. So it was the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl. Okay, well, Citrus Bowl, Buffalo Wild Wings, I don't make the connection there. And there's a whole lot of other sponsorships and these just, you know, when you tie it all together, sometimes the names are just, I'm trying to think of the, I think it is the Poinsettia Bowl, but they had some crazy length, you know, sponsorship attached to that, and of course the networks are obligated to read that out every time and not refer to it as the Orange Bowl, but it's always the Capital One Orange Bowl. And, you know, it takes the announcer like 43 seconds to read off the name of the bowl game or mention it every time he refers to the bowl game.
Yeah, totally. Well, I know we're running out of time here, so why don't you quickly tell our audience how they can find you and watch your show?
So it's fairly easy. You can just go to YouTube and look up Mark Rogers TV. That's all one word, Mark Rogers TV. Or you can just go to markrogerstv.com. It will reference right back to YouTube. So that'll just work in a loop. So markrogerstv.com. And regardless of your team, I will say that we are Power Five centric. I love the group of five. Love watching those games on Thursday and Friday. But I'm one guy. I do have a ton of contributors on the channel with me, but we do focus on the Power Five. So you'll hear a lot of discussion, debate, and analysis about some of the big topics that we're talking here, you know, playoffs and players getting paid and players missing bowl games and those big topics. But we also focus on particular teams and try to cover everybody. But so you will hear your, you know, your Iowa spring report. From the Iowa guy that comes on and can spew forth the, you know, who's playing the third string left guard position. And we grind it down to that degree as well. But we love college football debate, discussion, and analysis. And we've got new videos posted every day.
Well, I love listening to it and watching it. So thanks for doing that. And I encourage the people listening to this to go check it out. So thanks a lot, Mark. Hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate it.
All right, bye. Thanks again for listening. Mark was really great. You should definitely check him out at markrogerstv.com. You know, talking to him, we touched on it for a brief minute, but I really want to reiterate that if there are things in life that you want to do, find people that have already done them. And even if you don't know them, just try reaching out to them. You know, you might not hear back from some of them, but you'll hear back from others. And, benefiting from their experience, their advice, or maybe even possibly their connections can help you to get from where you are to where you want to be. So take that for what it's worth. Keep tuning in and go and check out the College Selector if you guys are interested. All right, until next time. Bye.